ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Shukadev Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form, instructing Brahmaji, the leader of the living entities, disappeared." Purport. In this verse, it is clearly mentioned that the Lord is Ajanaha, or the Supreme Person, and that he was showing his transcendental form, Atmano Rupam, to Brahmaji, while instructing him in the summarization of Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 verses. He is Ajanaha, or the Supreme Person, amongst Jananam, or all persons. All living entities are individual persons, and amongst all such persons, Lord Hari is supreme. As confirmed in the Shruti Mantra, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. So there is no place for impersonal features in the transcendental world as there are impersonal features in the material world. Whenever there is chaitana or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. In the spiritual world, everything is full of knowledge, and therefore everything in the transcendental world, the land, the water, the tree, the mountain, the river, the man, the animal, the bird, everything is of the same quality, namely chaitana. And therefore everything there is individual and personal. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us this information as the supreme Vedic literature, and it was personally instructed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to Brahmaji, so that the leader of the living entities might broadcast the message to all in the universe in order to teach the supreme knowledge of Bhakti Yoga. Brahmaji in turn instructed Narad, his beloved son, the same message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Narad in his turn taught the same to Vyasadeva, who again taught it to Shukadev Goswami. Through Shukadev Goswami's grace and by the mercy of Maharaj Parikshit, we are all given Srimad Bhagavatam perpetually to learn the science of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. First of all, I'll answer Jai Gopinath's question, which you could have asked me personally. You sent by email? You don't remember? About Gaur-Nitai? I wonder why you didn't ask me. Personally. How can we identify in the deities of Gaur-Nitai who is Gaur and who is Nitai? Who can say? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's right foot is forward. Anything else? Generally you'll find at the base, I don't know if it's only in ISKCON, I don't think so, no, it's the makers of the deities, they paint the base of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's form yellow, and that of Nityananda Prabhu?
Blue.
So that's the answer. Alright. So, Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing here, as he emphasizes so many times, the process of parampara. Shukadev Goswami is speaking to Maharaj Parikshit how Hari, the Personality of Godhead, instructed Brahma. Later, Brahma instructed Narad, who instructed Vyas. There's big leaps in time here. Vyas instructed Madhvacharya, and we are coming in the Brahma Gauriya Madhva Vaishnav Sampradaya. Shukadev Goswami is instructing Parikshit Maharaj. Also present at the time was Suta Goswami, who will later give the same knowledge to Shonaka and other rishis at Naimisharanya. So sometimes people ask about parampara. Well, what happened to Shukadev? Where's the parampara coming from Shukadev? Well, Krishna says to Arjuna, evam parampara praptam imam raja shiyo vidhu sakale neha mahata yoga nashta parantapa sa eva yam mayate dya yoga prokta puratanaha. He said that in this way, having just instructed how he spoke to the sun god Vivasvam. Idam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavana Hamabhyayam Vivasva Manave Praha Manor Ikshvakabe Bravit Evam Parampara Praptam. So I spoke to Vivasva, he spoke to Manu, Manu spoke to Ikshvaku, and in this way the parampara came down. Now it is broken, and therefore I am speaking it again to you. So people have to say, well, who came after Arjuna? But the parampara doesn't necessarily work in what we might consider a linear way. Krishna says, I spoke to Vivasvam, he spoke to Manu, he spoke to Ikshvaku. But just like we see here, Vyas instructed Shukadev, he instructed many others also. Instructed Shukadev. Shukadev Goswami instructed Parikshit Maharaj. But Parikshit Maharaj didn't... The knowledge of Bhagavatam that we're getting doesn't come. We don't find the next speaker is Parikshit Maharaj, although he did actually speak. After Shukadev left and before Takshak bit him, he imparted this knowledge to someone else. Who is that? Does anyone know? His mother by the name of? Uttara. So he instructed, but we don't have any knowledge of that she spoke to someone else or how the parampara is coming down like that. But another listener, Sudha Goswami, who wasn't even really the chief listener. No, he wasn't. Definitely Parikshit Maharaj was the... He was the hearer. He was asking the questions. He was prompting Shukadev. But Sudha Goswami heard. He delivered this knowledge to Shonakadi Rishi. And we have the Bhagavatam now. The Bhagavatam was commented on by Sridhar Swami. It's not exactly known how long ago, over 1,000 years ago. And in the Madhva Sampradaya, or in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepted Sridhar Swami's commentaries. And all the Gaudiya commentators, they give deference to Sridhar Swami. Although Vallabh, in his Sampradaya, he doesn't accept Sridhar Swami. He wants to give his own direct commentary. But anyway, this knowledge is coming down. There may be apparent gaps in time. People ask about the apparent gaps in our parampara, the paramparas it was given by by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Up to his own connection with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, there's no Diksha connection. There's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After him, it's given Rupa Raghunath, sometimes Sanatan, sometimes Surup Damodar. Their names are given there. But there's no evidence of Chaitanya, or there's no record of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu having given initiation to anyone. Or of Rup, Sanatan, of them giving initiation. Although some of them, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he gave initiation to some devotees. But anyway, the next in the line is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who wasn't initiated by any of the six Goswamis, although he repeatedly states in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that he accepts them as his gurus. Then next written is, we don't have any record of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami initiating anyone. And then the next is Narottam Das, the next who has written. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he was in Vrindavan in the period when just after the six Goswamis. So he was old at that time. are just... They were very old, he was old. And Narottam Das was also there, maybe a little after Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. As a young boy, he was receiving instruction from Jiva Goswami. So they're practically at the same time. But there's no Diksha connection. Or we don't find that Narottam Das, we don't have any record of him personally meeting Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And the next given in the line is Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, who does have a Diksha connection with Narottam Das, but it's removed. It means that he's the disciple of the disciple of Narottam Das. And the next is Baladev Vidyabhushan, who accepted Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur as his guide, but his initiation was in the Madhva Sampradaya. And then next is given to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. There's a gap there of at least 150 years, time gap. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur wasn't initiated by Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, but he didn't initiate Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj either. And Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj gave some kind of diksha, what's called Bhagavati diksha, to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Definitely, it's no question of being a Vaidiki diksha, and it wasn't even a standard Pancharatriki diksha. So, the parampara, it's a controversial topic. But by tracing this parampara, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to emphasize that parampara is maintained by pure devotees. That's why he called it Bhagavati parampara. Otherwise, what happens is one person says to another, one person says to another, one person says to another. This is the chain. But as the saying goes, the chain is as strong as its weakest link. You have a very good, strong chain. But if one link is weak, say you want to tie up an elephant, you need a very strong chain. But the chain is as strong as its weakest link. You can get first-class steel, very solidly formed, and make very strong links in the chain. But if there's one, if you link two of these very strong links with a little thin copper wire, it's good for electric wire, then the utility of the rest of the links becomes lost, because the elephant can easily break it. So one may come in a very good parampara according to diksha, but if one's immediate link is not properly fixed in the knowledge, or if oneself is not fixed in the knowledge, then he's not really properly in the parampara. That applies at the present time also. It's not, we accept Srila Prabhupada as a Maha Maha Bhagavat, whether or not we do, he is a Maha Maha Bhagavat. But it's not that simply by being Prabhupada's disciple, one is automatically a Maha Bhagavat, or even for that matter, a properly fixed devotee. One has to speak the same message, for otherwise it's a different message. That's why Prabhupada always emphasized presenting the knowledge as it is, without any change. What is unchanged in the line coming from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through the six Goswamis and Sarup Damodara, through Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami down to Srila Prabhupada? What is unchanged? The knowledge is unchanged. Whereas in the official paramparas, Even the knowledge might be presented, but the life, the spirit, is changed. That's why we find in Bengal what they call the traditional or orthodox sampradayas, in Bengal and in Vrindavan, in Orissa also. They can trace their parampara, their diksha dynasties from great personalities. The Nityananda Vamsha is supposed to be traced from disciples of Virchandra Gosai, who was the son of Nityananda Prabhu, transcendental son. Advaita Vamsha is traced from Advaita Acharya Prabhu himself. So like this, there are so many vanshas, the members of which are constitute the what is called the Pariva or family. So there's Advaita Vamsha, Advaita Pariva. There are so many. Gadadha Pariva. There's no Gadadha Vamsha because Gadadha didn't, he was a brahmachari, he didn't have any children. Narottam Pariva. Shyamanandi Vaishnavas. Coming in the line from Shyamananda Prabhu. So you'll find that in these sampradayas, they have many, or these, not, they're not sampradayas, they're branches within the sampradaya. They have many facets of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. They'll wear tilak and chant, kirtan, speak on the Bhagavad. But in most cases, there are discrepancies also. A major and obvious discrepancy in most of the lines coming in Bengal and in Orissa is that most of the members eat fish, which definitely is not within the practice or precept of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, there's also biddy smoking. And although you might find a few rare gurus within the sampradaya who don't do these things, but they give what they call initiation to people who do eat fish and all these things, and they don't insist that you have to give these things up. In fact, they don't give any teaching of any sort in most cases. It's gosai giving. They just go around and they, traditionally they'll go around to their disciples, and mostly their rich disciples, and collect funds. They collect dakshina. And in this way they maintain their families. So there's no life of the sampradaya. Where's the life? You can give a list of names that this person gave this mantra, but the mantra, the life of the mantra is the bhakti. And with the mantra, divyam jnanam yato dadyat, one should give the knowledge by which one can attain mantra siddhi, perfection in chanting the mantra. So there are many misconceptions about what it means to be a guru and what it means to be a disciple. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he practically redefined the whole direction of the sampradaya. He didn't place emphasis on receiving mantras in a line of persons where the line of persons, the spirit had been lost. But he placed emphasis, not, he didn't de-emphasize diksha, but he emphasized that without the connection, parampara, I mean, you have to come into the shelter of a parampara. But unless the connection is there, with the great devotees or the representatives of Krishna, then we don't get Krishna. We're not really properly connected to a parampara. He told, parampara jano bhalo mate. One should know very well what is meant by parampara. He was a teacher. He was always teaching. That is the role of a guru, to teach disciples what they have to do, what they have to understand, by which they can become spiritually advanced. Nowadays, when we say teacher, we mean someone who's paid to do a job to teach some secular knowledge. There's no specific relationship between the teacher and the disciple. But this word, the Sanskrit word is there, shikshak, for teacher, one who gives shiksha. But it's not a common word in Sanskrit. The general term is guru, acharya. There's also the term upadhyaya. That maybe would fit better with what we call teacher. Guru and acharya, these terms are often synonymous, although they can, in specialized usages, they can have somewhat different meanings, but practically it means the same thing. So the relationship between the guru and the disciple, it's not like that between the teacher and the student in the modern age, where the teacher teaches to fulfill his own purpose. His own purpose is to get some money. And the student learns for his own purpose. His own purpose is to get qualifications so he can earn some money. There's no commitment from the student side toward the teacher, save that within the very limited context of his temporary learning from him. And from the teacher's side, what he's teaching, he might be interested in it, but for him, it's a means to a not very laudable end. Whereas guru, now of course there can be a dancing guru, just like Arjun. He became a dancing guru. How to learn how to, he was taught when he was eunuch for 1 year, he became a dancing guru. Or you can have a music guru, or guru in so many different facets of Vedic knowledge. But in the full sense of the term, guru means ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalaka chakshurin militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. The guru is worshipped for removing the ignorance which thwarts all our endeavors for happiness. Parabhavastavadabodajata yavannajinyasata atmatatvam. We're always defeated in our endeavors for happiness as long as we don't inquire into the science of the Absolute Truth, the science of the Self. So guru means a teacher of the Absolute Truth. And that teaching, it's not just an academic subject matter, but he himself is fully committed to that. He teaches not because he needs to do so for getting some remuneration for living, for filling his belly, but because he's committed to Krishna and wants to communicate that to others. Therefore, the qualification to become a disciple is that one is prepared to be as committed to learning as the teacher is to teaching. And how does he teach? It's by his very life. Achinoti yashastrartam achare sthapyatyapi swayam acharate yasmat acharyastena kirtitaha. Acharya is one who knows the Shastric conclusion and teaches that to others, not only by precept, but by his own personal example also. So he's fully committed and he wants to instill that in the disciple. So the guru means heavy, and to be a disciple one cannot be light. It's nothing shallow. It's profound. We often think of smiling guru. In Russia, I saw once they made a collage of picture of Prabhupada smiling, and surrounding him were the many of the sannyasis who are initiated on Prabhupada's behalf within Russia. And every face they had, they're all smiling. So it's like they made a rule. Guru must smile. It's the most important thing you should do is smile. If he smiles, it makes me feel good. So that's the guru's job. He makes me feel good. I'm feeling not very good, I'm feeling miserable, and the guru makes me feel good. But his job or his service to his guru is not simply to smile at people, not to blow on their boils. Prabhupada gave this example in Rishikesh when Prabhupada was giving lectures every evening while sojourning in Rishikesh. I believe it was June, thereabouts, 1977. Maybe May or June, whatever. So every evening he was giving lectures, and at the end of one of his lectures, someone protested that, "Why are you so strong?" Prabhupada said, "I have to be. You have to use the knife to cut." So he gave the example of a surgeon. That someone has a boil, you can come and blow on it. That may give some very slight temporary relief, but it doesn't cure the condition. Cutting is required. So someone who wants just blowing on the boil and not cutting, then they shouldn't go to guru. Otherwise they convert, or the whole concept of guru, just like the upper sampradayas in Bengal, is someone who doesn't tell you, he doesn't interfere with your life. He just gives blessings and makes you feel spiritual. Because I'm initiated, now I'm spiritual. But he doesn't tell you what to do or correct you if you do something wrong or demand anything of you. He's just nice, that's all. Guru should be nice. Makes us feel good. So in this way, because they're not representatives of Shukadev Goswami, they're not representatives of the Parampara, even though they may be able to say, "Well, my guru was such and such, and his guru was such and such, and his guru was such and such," and you go all the way back to Advaita Prabhu. So I may say, "Well, that's Advaita Prabhu, the personality of Godhead." But who is Advaita Prabhu and who is you? There's a difference. If there's a difference, then you can give a list of names, but you have no actual connection, except that you can say, "My guru was such and such, and his guru was..." But At some point, the chain became broken because someone was not acting as a guru. He was just making a show of being a guru. And so the whole idea of what it means to be a guru just comes down to blessings. So that's why I don't like all the time people coming out, blessing, blessing, blessing. Why don't you take some instruction? Why are you always asking blessing? Blessing, that means, yeah, I already know everything. Don't tell me what to do. You just give whatever I'm doing, you give blessing. That's all. We don't find that Parikshit Maharaj came to Sukadev Goswami, give me a blessing. Sanatana Goswami came to Chaitanya, give me a blessing. You just give me your blessing and, you know, I'll give you 100 rupees and you shut up and that's all. We don't find any such thing. Ke ami kene amai jare ta patroi. Who am I? Why am I suffering in this material existence? Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, what is the duty of every human being, especially of one who is about to die? What am I supposed to do? He wanted to take some instruction. But we don't want to take instruction, we just want to take blessings. And then he'll smile, and then we all feel very nice. This is not parampara, this is cheating. So that, what does it mean to be a guru? Then we'll find, people think that guru kripa hi kevala, that's there in Shastra. But what is that guru kripa? Just, he looks at you and smiles, and then you give him a big meal and some dakshina, and then that's all. And if he can sing nicely, that's good also, and tell some stories and cry while he's telling them, that's better. Otherwise, the idea came that, well, just because he's in the Advaita Pariva, or Nityananda Pariva, therefore automatically divine, because he's descendant of these great persons. So we may have the same idea. Well, someone, he's disciple of Prabhupada, therefore must be divine. You have to see a disciple, they're actually following, or they're not. Are they following? Are they teaching as Prabhupada teaches? Sometimes they think if Prabhupada was here now that he'd be rejected within ISKCON for being too strong or not reasonable or doesn't know how to preach properly and doesn't know how to deal with people because Prabhupada was so strong. That's often condemned in our modern ISKCON. Prabhupada said to act as I do, speak as I do, but if you do that, then it's not much appreciated. If one attempts to do so, it's not much appreciated. So, what is ISKCON? ISKCON should mean that's following Prabhupada, because Prabhupada followed the parampara. Simply to put a sign on the door doesn't ISKCON founder Acharya, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We can go through the motions of having the programs, but unless the spirit is there of actually following Prabhupada, then it may be just a show, and gradually things become watered down. Just like in the so-called Gaurya Sampradaya in Bengal, everything's going on more or less. They have kirtans and they worship deities and do all these things. But basically everyone's interested in their own personal self-interest. That's all. And they're very comfortable with that. But guru comes, gives a blessing, we give him some money, we have some kirtan, and then we go off. We are Vaishnavas, we wear tilak. So, That may give us the feeling that I'm religious, I'm pious. But love of Krishna, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, that requires surrender. That requires giving up one's perverted sense of self-interest and actually entering into the spirit of the Shikshashtaka, mat prana natastusa eva napa. That we are fully giving ourselves to Krishna. So we shall have to see, are we following Prabhupada in name only? We shouldn't think that it's that because the name ISKCON is there, then automatically everything will be all right. We have to actually follow what Prabhupada says. Otherwise, if in the name of Nityananda Prabhu, in the name of Advaita Prabhu, in the name of Narottam, Gadadha, Shamananda, and all such Maha-Maha-Bhagavats, if such cheating could go on that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, practically he rejected it all and gave a new form and definition to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. If it can happen in their name, then it can happen in Prabhupada's name also. If we don't actually follow what he says, as he says, in the spirit that he has given to us. Even, you see, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, what great efforts he went to. But then, the spirit was lost in his own institution, to a large extent. Because people had, so Srila Prabhupada has told us, because people who were supposed to be his followers, they had their own program. They didn't want to, either they wanted to change what he said, or while keeping the form of what he said, they didn't have the spirit of what he said. And so, to a large extent, or the external manifestation of what he gave became lost in self-interest. The preaching, the vigorous preaching movement, preaching very strongly against all forms of deviation, openly declaring that this jatomat tatopat, which is so much popular in Bengal, they're sworn to fight this and defeat this. Such a spirit, but it became lost in disputes over property and position and all this kind of thing. So we have to be very careful, because ISKCON has properties, it has respect, and the properties which are being acquired for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness, no self-interest, they can also be utilized for self-interest. The facility is given for within these properties for eating and sleeping so that one can serve Krishna. But if one takes them as facilities primarily for eating and sleeping, and so I can eat and sleep, I have to do a little show of serving Krishna, then the spirit is lost. So much can be said about this. The point is, we have to see the parampara comes parampara jano bhalo mate. We shouldn't be shallow in understanding the parampara and just lazy and thinking that, this is a disciple of Prabhupada, therefore, or this has got this, the sign is gone, therefore everything is okay. But we have to see if one is actually following or not. If one is receiving actual spiritual knowledge, then that spiritual knowledge gives him the ability to discriminate between sat and asat. What is true, what is spiritual, which is correct and to the point, and which isn't. And if we're lazy, if we think that, just The sign is there, ISKCON. Therefore, whatever goes on inside, that's all spiritual and transcendental. That's lazy thinking which fosters corruption. Because then we think that corruption means either philosophically or even directly in terms of siphoning of funds and so many things. So we have to see what is actually going on. Is this what Prabhupada wanted or not? Is this parampara? Or is it simply saying, well, my guru was such and such, he was a disciple, so he was a follower of Prabhupada. And then what Prabhupada said, what his mission was, we don't know. We have no idea. Or we reinterpret. That's another favorite idea. Reinterpret to fit our own sense gratification. So let's be careful to be sincere in following.